more of Life Effect Now, I'm Mitch Tyke. If you're a listener of a certain age, you probably recognize the theme from the classic video game Super Mario Brothers. You'll also probably get the reference in the title of poet B.J. Best's new collection of prose poetry called But Our Princess Is in Another Castle. It's a refrain that comes on the screen after each of the first 7 levels of the game is completed, one that frustrated millions of kids in the 1980s and 90s. Best harkens back to the heyday of arcade games and video game consoles like Nintendo and Atari as the inspiration behind these poems. They might seem less highbrow than the literary allusions of Keats and Whitman, but Best believes that this art form was ripe for Mario-esque plumbing. And like the universal appeal of Tetris, he tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce, the collection has something for everyone.
The book overall is a book of prose poems inspired by video games, and each one is titled with a classic video game. It's important to know that the book isn't written about the games, and therefore my intent is that it can be enjoyed by people who have played these games and who grew up in the 80s and are real familiar with them, but also by people who aren't familiar with any of the games.
Why did you feel that these games made for good material, good metaphors for some of the themes of growing up, love, losing love, finding yourself that you're exploring in this book?
You know, the old adage is write what you know, and that means you need to consider what you know. And, you know, a large part of my own growing up was, in fact, playing a lot of these games, and it doesn't immediately seem like it's good material for art. But when I went back and started kind of replaying these games, the thing that struck me about them was simply how weird a lot of them are. Like, they have all these things that simply don't make sense. And we'll go back to Mario for a second. So Mario is a plumber, and he is in a kingdom that was once ruled by mushrooms and has since been taken over by turtles. In order to get more powerful, he eats a mushroom and then he eats a flower. Like, none of it makes sense. And it's especially true for, like I said, the classic video games where all these kind of incongruous details are just thrown together. But the result is something kind of magical as a result. And so thinking about it for the book, it was really cool because since the narratives of the games don't make sense, it's easy to pick out the things that I thought were interesting and try to build my own narratives off of them.
You talked about the fantasy, the fact that in so many of these games, the narrative, if there is one, doesn't make sense. And I thought that was such a good analogy for what it's like when you're a kid looking at the world growing up. And certainly the first few chapters in the book, you know, reflect that idea.
Yeah, the cool thing about being a kid is that when you're a kid, you're kind of open to wonder and magic wherever it shows up. And like I said before, certainly video games offer this magic, this kind of magical experience. But you can find it anywhere. You know, you find it playing out in the woods and, you know, digging around and building a fort and pretending. Or, you know, I've got a 3-year-old son at home right now, and it's amazing what he enjoys pretending. You know, one moment he's a conductor for music and he's got a baton, and the next moment he's a fireman and he loves sliding down poles, whatever he thinks is a pole at the time. And so because we're more open to the ideas that things don't need to make sense and that we can be one thing at one moment and one thing at the next, I think video games play really easily to that, where you can be a plumber in Super Mario Brothers and then you can be this hero in The Legend of Zelda and wield a sword, and it's all just part of your experience.
Many of the poems are also looking at love, burgeoning relationships, and I mean, some of them, man, just punched me in the gut. I have to say, Psalm, GoldenEye 007, mm-hmm. and Asteroids, those were two that to me just kind of stuck out, and yet they're very short, very terse, and yet you maximize the effect of the words by that simplicity of language. Is that something that you can only get through prose poetry?
Well, on one level, that compression of language is what you get through any poetry whatsoever, right? Because the art of, you know, I think it's Coleridge who says poetry is the best words in the best order. What I like about prose poetry is it actually kind of lulls the reader into a false sense of security, because a lot of people aren't real comfortable with reading poetry, especially contemporary poetry. You know, a real common complaint is people say they don't get it for whatever reason, and that it doesn't appeal to them and they avoid it as a result. And it's true. I mean, the poetry's audience in the world today is very small, unfortunately. What I like about prose poetry is that if you put some paragraphs in front of someone, they're a lot more comfortable. They're like, okay, paragraphs. I know how to read this. I've done this before. And it offers an opportunity, an artistic opportunity that way, because it's an opportunity to do something surprising. And for me, a good prose poem does something surprising with the language that a normal paragraph that you'd read in a nonfiction book or a newspaper or something like that doesn't do. And it's an opportunity to offer more surprises and sudden twists in subject that technically if you're writing a five-paragraph essay, for example, you're never supposed to do. And so that's what I like about the tension of the prose poems. And again, it works well with the idea of the video games because all these details don't make sense. Copying that and kind of adapting that for the poems themselves I think works effective way.
Well, and additionally, in many of the games, they're very episodic, which really works for prose poetry, which is kind of little vignettes, if you will.
Definitely. And the whole book is kind of arranged that way. It's mimetic of video games in the sense that a lot of them are divided up into levels. And here in the book, there's 8 different sections and they're all, you know, they're short. They're between 6 and 7 poems long. And that was all very intentional to kind of say reading the book is also kind of like going through a video game.
One of the themes that's also running through all of these levels is this idea of self and identity and finding oneself. And I also kind of find that interesting if you take it from the meta level of looking at this as being a gamer is such an identifier in mm-hmm. our culture today.
I mean, what I think is most interesting about these games is that they force you to take on a different identity whenever you wind up playing them. And it's become especially true with the advent of the entire genre. It's known as a first-person shooter. And it's developed as the idea that you are the person. And literally, when you're playing the game, what you see is a hand holding a gun, usually. And that means that you are the person actually doing it. And it becomes a really odd dislocation of identity as a result, because you're never you in the game. And the characters are developed more or less depending on the exact game that you're playing. But the games are forcing you to take these different roles. And the interesting thing to me about that whole shooter genre is that in the real world, you would be a mass murderer. That is what you would be. And yet it's common and accepted that you are the hero and you're going to kill hundreds of people in order to save the world. And you're only going to do it more or less by yourself. And so it's this kind of fantasy that some of these games put forward that you are the hero, you're the only one who can save the princess or, you know, defeat evil or whatever. And so it's kind of aspirational in that way, because isn't that in some ways what we always want to be in life? We want to be the hero. We want to be, you know, saving the world. But obviously it never works that way. And the other interesting thing about identity with video games is that the heroes often fail. You die in video games a lot more than you actually succeed and win overall. And that idea of resurrection is really interesting too. And so playing these games does dislocate who you are in favor of someone else. And I think that's very interesting. And as I said before, you know, the poems themselves aren't inherently autobiographical, although I weave in plenty of my own biography to do it. But I thought it was really interesting to kind of explore, you know, who are these speakers if they're couching so much of their lives in the details of the games themselves.
How did you go about writing But Our Princess Is in Another Castle? Was this an idea that had been rattling around for a while? Is it something you sat down and you said, you know what, I'm going to go through all of these games and inspired by these games, I'm going to write these pieces? Or did you find yourself using some of these references in your poems already and go, oh, here's a great platform through which I can approach these poems?
It was an intentional starting point. And actually, it's weird to think of playing games as research. But that's honestly what I had to do, was go and play some of these games, because I hadn't thought about them or seriously played them in a long time. And when you're playing and thinking about them in terms of what can I use them for in order to write my own poetry, you're thinking about them in a very different way than, oh, I'm just going to kill 10 minutes or an hour, you know, kind of enjoying myself playing some of these old games. So I started playing them, looking for those odd details that I talked about previously and seeing what might trigger me. The interesting thing about this project is that it actually does speak to a much older tradition, and it's known as ekphrastic poetry, which is poetry in response to art. There's plenty of famous poems out there. One really famous one is by Anne Sexton. It's called Starry Night, after the Van Gogh piece. Really, I view this as kind of ekphrasis for the 21st century, you know, using video games as the source of art, even though it's pop art, and drawing from them and building my own work off of that.
Going off of what you just said, using the video game as art, this is a great moment to have you talk about Tetris as inspiration.
Sure. The poem's called God Plays Tetris, and it's irreverent, you know, in certain ways. In some ways, it was spurred on an article I read The articles claimed that, and they did the math behind it, that you can never win Tetris. No matter – you cannot play infinitely on Tetris. The way the program is written, the combination of pieces will always, always, always make you lose. And so I thought, well, that's not terribly optimistic. And so for thinking about the faith chapter, I thought, well, what would God do in result to that unfortunate bit of knowledge, knowing that no matter how powerful you are, you can never win the game? And so that's kind of where the piece began. I just kind of took it to some logical conclusions based on there, and then kind of had some fun along the way. You know, it's funny to imagine, you know, the classic question is, can God make a stone he can't lift and that sort of thing? But no matter who you are, even if you're God, you can't beat Tetris.
Well, let's hear that.
God plays Tetris. His machine is immaculate. Gold and titanium, diamond resistors, and a seraphic hum while running. But the program, invented by Alexei Pajitnov and ported to the arcade by Atari in 1988, is the same. The first levels are mindless, and he drops through them with zen. Then, disembodied blocks, but it's easy, building towers with a dark canyon on one side, occasionally eroding it with the one straight piece. Soon, the shapes drift from Virga to flurries to snow. A mislaid piece and he can still recover without grace. Then muttering, I'll put this square here, thank you. No, I don't want another six of those orange S-shaped pieces. Damn it, I just need a straight one. Which either does or does not come. His omniscience is useless. Towers become ugly, jumbled mountains, hard and fast. He has made mountains before, and he has made floods, but his past sins will not wash away. He is drowning in squares. This is what it must feel like. He loses, beats the side of the machine with his palm, wonders why he gave them free will. Well, it's not just this, but a lot of things. Unhip, weary. Then he exhales a laugh with a thin smile. He had forsaken Russia many years ago, so lurid. Those creepy nesting dolls, any czarocracy, vodka, that Siberian nothing, communism, unnecessary quantities of potatoes, backwards R's, atheists, and garish spindled minarets, no holy man would enter.
Excellent. I want to have you talk about the final poem.
Sure.
In the book, Congratulations, Enter Your Initials, which if anyone who's played these games and actually gotten to the end, despite hours and hours lost in your basement playing these games,
right,
you will see this if you got a high score.
Right. Yeah. It's one of the few poems in the book that's not deliberately titled after an actual video game. But it was super common in the arcade games, especially. You put a quarter in, and if you did well enough, you got to enter your initials. And this is back when arcades were public places, or otherwise these games would show up in bars or pizza parlors and that sort of thing. And it was an honor. You could enter your initials in, and then they would keep flashing up on the screen every minute or so when nobody was playing, saying that you were one of these people. You were one who managed to master it at this particular location, obviously until either the owner unplugged the machine or somebody bumped you off. And so, you know, the final poem kind of speaks to that idea that we all want to make our mark in some way, even if the mark is about something small, and even if it's something that in the grand scheme of life isn't that much of an accomplishment. But we're constantly seeking out that recognition for whatever we do, even if it's something small and, you know, plenty of people might consider it trivial. But it also speaks largely to the competitive aspect of video games. You know, a lot of single-player games, you're competing against the computer. But if you've ever played a game with somebody watching over your shoulder, all of a sudden you're trying to show how good you are to that other person.
Breaking every brick for those extra 50 points.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so – but isn't that the way life is in a lot of ways too? We work harder when other people are looking too, and then we want to come on radio shows and talk about the things we've done as well.
Well, BJ Best, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about But Our Princess Is in Another Castle.
Thank you very much.
Wisconsin poet BJ Best's latest collection is called But Our Princess Is in Another Castle. He also has two previous books of poetry and three chapbooks and teaches at Carroll University in Waukesha. He spoke with Stephanie Lecce in March. A Lake Effect essayist looks to one of the most anticipated parts of the year for him, a time when he can just hang out. We'll learn more when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.